Let's all move to Glen Eyrie, shall we? I'd like to live here for a while. Nice to get out of Chicago. Our heads in prayer, shall we? Heavenly Father, tonight we ask that thou will help us to see thy word and thy world, the work that thou dost want us to do. We're not concerned about Mars or Jupiter, or planets, stars, constellations in the heavens, but this is our parish, every nation, tribe, people, kindred and tongue, are our neighbors. Lord, help us tonight to be honest with ourselves, with thee, and to see what thou dost want us to do and show us how we can do it. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Let's turn in our Bibles, shall we, to the book of Zechariah, the 8th chapter. It speaks here in the 8th chapter, in the 3rd verse, of Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth. And then, in verse 8, we read of truth again. I'll bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God in truth and in righteousness. Verse 16, these are the things that ye shall do. Speak ye every man truth, or the truth, to his neighbor. Execute the judgment of truth and peace in your gates. Let none of you imagine evil in your hearts against his neighbor. Love no false oath. For all these are things that I hate, saith the Lord. And the word of the Lord of hosts came unto me, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the fast of the 4th month, the fast of the 5th, the fast of the 7th, and the fast of the 10th shall be in the house of Judah joy and gladness, cheerful feasts. Therefore love the truth and peace. There are two elements here that I'm impressed with, namely the truth and the conveying of that truth to our neighbors. Let's turn now, shall we, to the book of Matthew, chapter 22, 37 and 38. And those of you who have been learning the topical memory system have this in portion of your memory work. Chapter 22, verses 37 and 38. Jesus saith unto him, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like unto it. Thou shalt love thy neighbor, thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Now let's turn to Romans, the 13th chapter. Romans chapter 13. Verse 8. Owe no man anything but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law. For this, thou shalt not commit adultery. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not covet. And if there be any other commandment, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Chapter 15 of Romans, verse 1, 2, and 3. We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification, for even Christ pleased not himself. As it is written, the reproaches of them that reproached thee fell on me. Now let's turn to Galatians, the 5th chapter, verse 13. For brethren, ye have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh. By love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this: thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another. Now let's turn to Ephesians, the 4th chapter, verse 25. Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Ye angry and sin not, let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Now there are many other verses that we could read on this particular subject. Now we're here at this conference discussing, talking about man-to-man evangelism, personal approach, personal contact. And I want us to enlarge our horizons a bit and project ourselves perhaps into the most difficult field there is, namely that of neighborhood evangelism, which takes in everything from the cradle to the grave. The little children, boys and girls, the teenagers, the young men and women in their 20s, on into the 30s, on up to the fabulous 40s, the fluffy 50s, and the, well, you name it, 60s and 70s and on. Bob Cook had something for each bracket. I've forgotten the rest of them. Our neighborhoods are comprised of the little ones right on up to the aging. Dick Halverson was speaking yesterday about specialties. Specialties, Sunday school, youth, child evangelism, Youth for Christ, InterVarsity, Navigators, CBMC, and ISI, and all the rest. All tied into the church, halfway houses of the church. But Jesus didn't specialize on any particular group. Paul was called to the uncircumcision, and Peter to the circumcision. And yet, both of their ministries intertwined and were interwoven between the circumcision and the uncircumcision, the Jews and Gentiles. And they ministered to bond the free, the Greek, the barbarian, the Jew, the Gentile, so on. Now, I don't think we can ever evangelize the world on a specialized program to a certain type of people. I worked with youth for a number of years. But I've discovered in those years of working in Youth for Christ that we can't evangelize the world on a youth basis, because youth can't do it alone. The old folks can't do it alone. The privates, the corporals, the sergeants, the lieutenants cannot do it alone in the army. They have to have the captains and the majors and the colonels and the generals and so on. And the generals and the colonels and the majors and the captains can't do it alone. They have to have the privates and the corporals, etc. Ever hear the story about the four little boys who were playing war? And they're all dressed up in their garb, buttons and badges and braids and everything. Daddy came home and he said, "What are you boys doing?" They said, "We're playing war. Why aren't you shooting? Why aren't you fighting?" He said, "We're all generals." Well, a lot of us want to be. We all want to tell the other fellow what to do. The generals can't do it alone. Corporals can't do it alone. We've got to do it together. The young and the old, the brawn and the brain, tying it together. It's the only way we're going to do it. The way communism works, the way Catholicism works, the young and the old, So on. Now, what is the field? What's the heart of the whole? What's the main line? We say, well, this neighborhood evangelism is a specialty. It's a branch. It's a byway. It's not the highway. What is the highway? What is the main line of evangelism? Is it pulpit evangelism? Now look at your Bible, to the book of Acts 5:42. Turn to Acts 5:42. Notice what it says. They cease not to teach and preach Jesus Christ in every synagogue and in every house. There we have. Say, could we shut this thing up on a platform? I think it'd be a little easier. Some of you husky fellows, the place is up to the top here. Go ahead. Now in Acts 5:42, we've got the synagogue, which is your public approach. And you've got the house, which is also public, but it's more private. Not so much collective, it's individual. You've got your father, your mother, your children. Now all of the East, all of Asia, most of South America, I would say all of South America, excluding some of your big cities like Sao Paulo and Rio and a few other places. All of Africa. People live in small communities. They live in neighborhoods. You've got your little alleys and little streets with your wells and your temples, your ox carts, your little donkeys, your little carts, some bicycles, very few automobiles. Most of the world lives in the state of peasantry. The peasants. We think this is life. We think American, the American way of life, is the norm of the world. It is not. We are the exception. Why, in Germany today, you'll see horses and wagons going right through the main streets of some of the towns. You'll see shepherds out in the fields with their staffs and their leather breeches and their leather jackets, shepherding the flocks. Whoever sees a shepherd in America, he's out buzzing around in an airplane rousing up the sheep. We do things different. Altogether different. And the rest of the world lives perhaps as it did 500 or 1,000 years ago, with the exception of the big cities where we have electricity and hot and running water, etc. The bulk of humanity lives as it did thousands of years ago. Candlelight, little oil lamps, torches with pitch. In the villages and the jungles, and you have your cattle living right next to the houses and in the homes, and your goats and your chickens and your ducks, etc. There's a neighborhood life. There's a family life. That family life and that neighborhood life is breaking down in America. In the small towns, we have it. You walk down the street in a small town, and you may be a stranger, but whoever you see on the street, they'll say, howdy, good morning. If you say howdy to a man in Chicago in the streets that you never met before, he'd look at you as though you started the war. He just doesn't like it. He said, what right are you to talk to me? And you don't get the lovely, hospitable response in the big cities that you get in your rural areas. Now, most of the world lives in neighborhoods. They have the neighborhood temple. They have the village well. They have the village priest, the village mendicant, the village a sorcerer, and so on. All of life revolves around that village element, and it does to this day. That's why the neighborhood is such an important parish. It's the work in which Jesus engaged, and he used Jerusalem as his immediate neighborhood. Jerusalem, then Judea, Samaria, and the uttermost parts. Now, this idea of neighborhood evangelism is coming to the fore more and more. A lot of people think it's a sideline of the church. I've heard pastors say again and again, well, we do house-to-house evangelism. We preach in the neighborhoods, but after all, you know, it's hard work, yes. I've heard professors in college say, yeah, I used to go out in street meetings. We used to preach on street corners when we were in Bible school, but you know, now I'm Professor so-and-so, and I'm pastor of the First and Last Baptist Church in such a place, you know, and after all, can't do everything. My young people do it. But do you do it?
That was my training, but now, you see, I'm the pastor. I'm the professor. Why should I get out there? That's for those fellas, the young fellas. They've got to learn the hard way. You know. That's one of our problems. The majors and the colonels and the generals aren't fighting. They aren't fighting. They're directing the battles.
Now, in the wars, our majors are out there with the men. Major says, come on, boys, we're going to take this hill. And he's out there running with the boys and ducking the bullets and fighting with them and dying with them. If he didn't go, they wouldn't go. Why was David the man that he was? Because he was a fighting general. He was a playing coach. The finest coaches in the world today are the playing coaches. And we've got a few bottlenecks that we've got to break. I feel that the Protestant church is in for a modern Reformation. I think the modern Reformation is on. Maybe a silent one, maybe a bloodless one, but I think it's on. And I wouldn't be surprised that the London campaign, Billy Graham, could very easily have precipitated the modern Reformation among Protestant churches. One Thursday morning in Westminster Central Hall, Billy Graham addressed 2,400 preachers, and he gave 12 points, one of the most masterful addresses I've ever heard in my life. And his main point, as I recall, his main point was this: gentlemen, put the sheep of your flock to work. Get your people out into the byways and the highways. And show them how to do it. I was reading in the World Dominion magazine a few weeks ago an article by Dr. John Stott, pastor of All Souls Church in London, who is one of the main participants in the London campaign. And he wrote this article on lay evangelism. It was a winner. One of the finest things I've ever read. Dr. John Stott, main churches, Anglican churches in London. He said, congregational witness is just as vital and important as congregational worship. They go hand in hand. You cannot do one without the other. And he is forming teams all over London to invade the shops and the offices and the homes of metropolitan London, house to house, neighborhood evangelism. Now, remember that the Bible tells us that on this hangs all the law and the prophets. On what? Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Does all the law and the prophets hang on this? Thou shalt preach a sermon every Sunday morning. That was this? No. On this hangs all the law and the prophets. Thou shalt hold a campaign in such and such a city. On what hangs all the law and the prophets? Thou shalt love thy neighbor, thyself. Up and down the land, and asking questions and talking to people about these things, every place I go, I hear this same story. The hardest place to witness and to win is in your own neighborhood. Why is that? I'll go with you six blocks from my house, but not across the street. Because I know them too well, and they know me too well. Yeah. Their boy broke my window the other day, and did I give them a piece of my mind, and did I lose my peace of mind? Yes, you did. There you did. Where it goes. All right, now let's get down, right down to earth. Let's get down to earth. Right after the London campaign, I went out with a pastor, one of the churches in Britain. He has the largest Sunday school in the British Isles. Graduate of Cambridge, M.A. He's now a canon. The Church of England. We went to 10 homes. In 7 out of 10 homes, we were able to lead people to Christ. In 7 out of 10. That was a very encouraging. We stayed up until 3 o'clock in the morning talking. From 2 to 3, that man was weeping. And I'll tell you why he was weeping. He said, "This is my agenda. This is my schedule day after day. I bury the dead. I marry the young. I baptize the babies. I handle my correspondence. I keep up the tombstones and the graveyards." Most of the churches in England have graveyards right around their churches. "I keep up the church. I prepare my sermons. And I don't have time to win souls. I have to keep care of my parish. I've got 4 curates, 4 assistants, and they have their churches." He broke out in tears. He said, "I want to win souls. Look at my desk." He had a pile of stuff this high. "You never saw such a desk." He said, "How can I win souls for Christ?" The next morning at the breakfast table, he showed me the paper. I won't tell you what paper it was. Pat, you would know, I guess. But here was a big long list of things noted by the editor of the paper that he had crystallized from his findings from letters written in by thousands of people to the paper giving their evaluation of the campaign and telling the newspaper what they thought of the religious situation in Britain, the preachers and the laity and the churches and all the rest. And here were the points. The preachers talked to us up here. They don't talk to us down here. The preachers don't dress like us. Why don't they dress like us? Why don't the preachers get out where we are? Then one by one they listed these points. The preachers are too busy marrying the young, burying the dead, and so on. They don't have time to save souls. He said, "Look at this." I said, "It looks as though some reporter was eavesdropping on our conversation." It was an uncanny thing. I got a letter from him the other day, and he says, "My curates are going out house to house now, and we're seeing the glory of God in our church. Things are happening." Now, this is in the air. It's in the air. We're seeing it again and again. I want to ask ourselves this question tonight. Why aren't we doing it? The Jehovah's Witnesses are doing it. Saturday morning, I was painting our bathroom. Lady came to the door and I was covered. "When I paint, brother, I paint everything." I really do. I had gray hair, brother. Painting the bathroom gray. And I came to the door and here was a lady with a valise in her hands, and she said, "I want to sell you a book. I want to give you some wonderful news, a wonderful message." I said, "Come on in." She could hardly speak English. She was a Polish lady. I knew who she was immediately. Jehovah's Witness. She sat down there, brother, and gave me the whole story. And I said, yeah. I asked her 101 questions. I said, "How do you do it? Who led you to Christ? Who converted you?" She says, "Somebody came to my house. Then I went down to Kingdom Hall. Then I went out with somebody. Now I'm going out alone. From house to house." 10 minutes later, somebody knocked the door. And here was a man. He was hunting for this lady. He'd lost her. She was his traveling companion in the neighborhood there. And I said, "What makes you folks do this?" He said, "Because we like to do it. We love it." It's down in South Africa. We knocked at the door. Lady came to the door, so happy. She said, "What can I do for you?" I said, "We're going around from house to house encouraging people to read their Bibles. You have a Bible?" "Why, certainly. Come on in." Came in. She said, "I'm a Jehovah's Witness." I said, "So are we." We had a great time. I said, now how many hours do you spend at this? She said, we as laymen. No, she didn't say that word. She said, we as ministers. And she was a widow. Two children, holding down a job, making a living. We as ministers spend not less than 20 hours a month going from house to house. That's a little less than 1 hour a day. We as ministers, 20 hours a month. Full-timers, they're at it all the time. Make hundreds of calls. At it all the time. Now, we've got to have a revolution. We've got to have a change. Or the Catholics are going to run over us. The Jehovah's Witnesses, and the Mormons, and the Communists, and the Christian Scientists, and the Seventh-day Adventists, they're going to take us. Now, here's our problem. First of all, our Bibles aren't open. The average Protestant does not read his Bible. Now, here are some of our findings, and you may want to make a mental note of this. We've gone into hundreds of homes, cold and warm and hot. And this is our discovery up till now. Detroit, Chicago, a few other cities in the Middle West, in certain areas of California, South America, South Africa, and Europe, and India. Most of the homes in America have Bibles. I would say two-thirds of the homes have Bibles. Most of the homes don't read their Bibles regularly, and many of them don't read them at all. Thirdly, most people do not have assurance in their hearts that they're saved. Very few people know what it means to be saved. And I would say it's a toss-up between the Catholics and the Protestants. The Protestants don't have any more assurance than the Catholics. Now, that's an awful statement to make, but that's our findings up till this date. In nice sections of Chicago, nice sections of Detroit, Bloomington, and other places in Illinois and California, Protestants and Catholics alike, most of them don't have any assurance that they're saved. If you should die today, where would you go? Well, I don't know. Who knows? Ask the average Mohammedan. If you should die today, where would you go? Well, I don't know. I hope I'll go to Sorga. Hope I'll go to heaven, but after all, who knows? Ask the average Hindu, if you should die today, where would you go? Well, maybe to Nirvana, maybe not. Average Catholic and the average Protestant answers just like the average pagan. It scares me, folks. I went to 60 homes in Chicago. In a few days' time, I found one Christian man and two backslidden Christian women. And the rest didn't know what it was all about. Now, fourthly, we've discovered that most people cannot pray out loud. They cannot utter a prayer. You say, can you pray? Yes, I pray to myself. I'm the God to whom I pray. I pray to myself. That's just the expression that most people use today, Protestants and Catholics. Or they can say a little, maybe the Lord's Prayer, but it's a whisper. Most people cannot pray, and most people are unhappy. That's what we're finding out. And sixthly, the most religious people are the women. My wife takes care of the religion in our house. I don't have time. I'm making the bread and butter, bringing home the bacon, holding down two jobs, and now the wives are holding down jobs too. We have neighborhood babysitters now. We have little homes where a lady who doesn't work takes care of six or seven babies all day long while the mama goes out and works. As I see it now, folks, our nation is cracking. Breaking at the seams and is going down the drain.
Yes.
I live in the second largest city in the Western Hemisphere.
brother, is rough. I happen to be a daddy of a half a dozen youngsters. Years ago, Dawson Trotman, Dick Hillis, Dave Morgan, and I had a little club. We each had five. Called ourselves the Fathers of 20. Dick had his sixth, Dave Morgan had his sixth, and I had my sixth. Doss automatically dropped out. But we keep him in as an honorary member. And those of us who are parents know what we face in our schools, in our neighborhoods. We know the task that is ours now. I've got two in college, two in high school, and two in grammar school. Boy, they keep us happy, humble, and poor. Now listen. The things that I hear from high school, the things that I read in our newspapers, terrible. In Chicago, we don't know nothing. We get just a little echoes, the stuff that the papers dare to print. Teachers in our high schools curse the children openly in their classes. Teachers come into their classes drunk. We have perhaps the largest high school in the world, six blocks from our home, Lane Tech. It's a boys' high school. And I've had fellas come to me and say, my teacher starts out every day by telling a dirty story. Then he asks two or three of the fellas in the class to see if they can top it before the lesson starts. That's in high school. You ought to see that pile of fellas as they stream out of the school. Practically every one of them whipping out a cigarette. 15, 16, 17 years of age. Here's a boy, can't get the car. Mom says, sorry, son, can't let you have the keys. The boy plans a murder. He goes to the kitchen drawer and pulls out the butcher knife, and at a certain time, waylays his mother and stabs her to death. It happened last week, I know. The funeral, the father said, now, son, don't be disturbed. He said, everybody makes mistakes. Took him back with the guard to the cell. He says, son, do you have enough cigarettes? The boy was 15. Do you have enough cigarettes to keep you over for next week? 15-year-old boy. Our headlines are terrible. I've never seen anything like it in the world. Practically every morning and every night, the Daily News, the Herald American, the Chicago Tribune, with the most sordid headlines. We see it in New York. Los Angeles is the same. Now, it looks bad. We don't talk about these things in churches as a rule because it's discouraging in a way. And I see only one hope. And that is for us to line up our neighborhoods and each of us as pastors and ministers becoming block wardens. As we have air raid wardens, as we have election wardens and sky watchers and PTA officers and 101 other things, why not line up within our blocks men and women, Christians, to be watchers, to be missionaries, to be evangelists right there in those blocks. And here we have a block. Here we are. These are all houses. Here's Mr. Christian. Blocks all around here. This is his mission field. This is his Jerusalem. These are his neighbors. He can say, I live in your block. Now, this was the great challenge that Dr. John Stott gave to his church, Block Evangelism in London. Dr. Charles Fuller has preached this and many others. Here's Mr. Christian in his block. Does he know this neighbor over here? No. Does he know this man over here? No. Does he know this man? No. No, no. Maybe this man and perhaps this man. And here's another street over here. He'll put this across the street, right on up here. He knows this man and maybe this man, but he doesn't know it well. Watering the lawn, polishing the car, or something else. All right, if we don't even know our neighbors, how are we going to love them? Paul said, I'll love them, but I'll love them from afar off. Somebody else said, well, I love people, but I love humanity, I think. I love humanity, but I hate people. Well, that's all right, too. Now, here's this fellow. He knows this man a little bit, but he talks about what? Children, weather, war, if there is one. There isn't one now. All right. That's all. He says, next time, I'll bring in the gospel. But the next time, doesn't come. Circumstances aren't right, he doesn't give the gospel. All right? He talks to this man about the weather, about politics, about the grass, about the flowers, about the kitties. Nothing happens. He's waiting. Time doesn't come. Here he's got this whole block. All right. Who are these people? Catholics, Jews, other Protestants, Christian Scientists, Rosicrucian, communists, nothing. All kinds. All right, here's the church over here on the corner. This church is surrounded by homes. The average Catholic church is tightly knit with its Catholic constituents, holding Mass 4, 5, 6, and 7 times every Sunday. All right. That priest is visiting these homes all the time. He sees bad literature or literature that is not conducive to the Catholic faith. He says, burn it up. Get rid of it. That's no good. Keeps the people informed about the church life, takes their money, and so on. All right. Now, here's the Protestant church over in this corner. Where are its members? They're way over here. Way over there. Way over here. Way down here. Are his members near him? No. My work is with pastors all the time. I never work independent of the church. I believe it's the greatest thing in the world today, the greatest institution, the most important building in the neighborhood, the most important institution in the world. But every pastor I work with, I go out with him to the houses within his own block. And I have yet to meet one pastor who has gone up, who hasn't made apologies for not believing. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just laying some facts before you tonight, and I'm doing this honestly the best I know how. I've gone with many a pastor who's had to go to the house next to his church and say, Mrs. Jones, I'm sorry, I've been here for 7 or 8 years and never once been in your house. And her house is built right next to his church, the same bricks meet. And again, house after house, in apartments, the pastor has had to apologize. I've been here for so many years and haven't once seen it. Please forgive me. But I want to come and tell you about Jesus. He's forgiven. Many a block we've gone right within the vicinity of church and have not found one single member of the church. And some places haven't found a single Christian. It worries me. Solid Catholics. Or Jews or something else. And the members of that church and the Christians, the born-again men and women, are scattered all over the city. All right, here's Mr. Born-Again Man. What's he doing about this neighborhood? What's this church doing about this neighborhood? All right, let's put on a canvas. We're going to have evangelists in town. We put on a canvas. We have the canvas. What happens? Do the neighbors come to the meeting? You know what the answer is.
No, they don't come.
Come to our church, hear our preacher.
No. We're Catholics.
Well, come to hear me preach on Sunday morning. Why should we come to hear you preach? You want us to get out of our church and come to your church so we can get our money? No, we don't.
People are against the church.
Sad to see.
Well, we're going to make a canvas. Do your children go to Sunday school? Yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. We've made 2,000 contacts, 500 are prospects. What are you going to do with those 1,500? Let them go to hell?
And said, well, we can't win them. They're Catholics.
What if the fellow that goes to Bolivia says, we can't go to Bolivia. They're Catholics.
The fellow said, we can't go to India. They're all Hindu. Can't go to Japan. They're all Buddhists.
So what?
Doesn't work that way. Either they're Catholics or Protestants.
I'm glad that I'm not a Catholic or a Protestant. I'm a Christian. Alabama.
Good name.
I'm in Kansas one day and met a fellow on the street and I said, are you a Christian? He said, no, I'm Baptist.
Now let's get right down to earth. You say, how are we going to get in this home? Here's Mr. Christian. How are we going to start? We're going to start doing it. All right, let's go. All right, what do we do? The husband and the wife is the best team. If you're not married, take a girlfriend or a boyfriend. Say, is two all right? Yes, two's perfect. All right, two men. Going in the daytime, it's hard to get in the homes because the men are gone, the ladies are home cleaning. Fixing up the house. They don't want two strange men coming to the house, so they'll talk to you at the door. The best thing to do is to take a little boy with you, a little girl. Take them with you for a decoy, bait. Get in. All right. I take my little 5-year-old boy in the tough spots of Chicago. He's five. He's got blue eyes, blonde curly hair. And I stand him in front of the door of some of these hard, tough-looking places, and he just stands there and smiles. I always get in. And he sits there and he likes to go because he gets to see television. Last week I had to go out in my own neighborhood, so busy in meetings and 101 other things, and I said to my children, I said, we've got to go out tonight in our neighborhood, meet some folks we haven't met. I said, who wants to go? Andrew and Ann, you're elected. Let's go. Andrew's 5. We started out. I said, shall we go in this house? Andrew said, no, let's go in this one. No, let's go in this one. I said, you know any of the children there? They don't have any children, but I know the lady. Walked up the stairs, knocked, pushed the doorbell. The lady came to the door. She looked at Andrew. She didn't look at me. She said, why, hello, Andrew. And she looked at me as if to say, well, who are you? I'm a little girl on this side, Andrew on this side. She said, are you Andrew's daddy? I said, I am. Come on in. So Andrew opened the door, walks in, you know, and he sits down, makes himself at home. And the sister and the brother-in-law of this lady were in there visiting. And she says, you're Andrew's father? Yes, you live in the corner? Yes. Ms. Anderson, I want to just get away with you and have a little visit. I said, really, I'm going around visiting all my neighbors, encouraging them to read their Bibles. Do you have a Bible? She said, I've got it right here. And it was lying right there in the davenport. I said to her brother and sister-in-law, Mr. Enos, do you have a Bible? Oh, yes, we have a Bible. We're Lutherans, but we never go to church. By that time, my little ambassador at large was going to sleep.
He was sitting
Little Anne sitting over there and discussed history with the brother-in-law of Mrs. Anderson. They were talking about Peter Herbert, who led the Crusades. She just studied about that in school. And so we had a two-way conversation. She was going this way to Mr. and Mrs., and I was going this way. The end, both those families committed themselves to read the chapter of John every day. Now this is the approach that I feel will work in any area of the world. It's a missionary approach, and it's a Bible approach. You knock at that door, you come in, you don't say, we're from such and such a church, or we're reverend, so we're so... No, leave the reverend out. Leave the church out. We're neighbors. And you can always get in. We're just going around, got a few minutes. Don't say, may I come in? Just say, do you have a few minutes? That means come in. And if they already invite you in, you don't need to say that. You say, we're neighbors, just visiting around. We live up here in the corner. If you got a few minutes, sure, come on in. And you get in, you sit down. It's winter time. It's winter time. Take off your overcoat. That means you're going to stay for a while. Television's on. All right. Let us stay on for a moment, but you start talking. If they don't turn it off, then you lower your voice so they can't hear you. So, well, just a minute, I have to turn it off. If they don't turn it down, you say to them, would you mind turning the telephone? Don't say, would you mind turning it off? Just say, would you mind turning it down to a dull roar or something like that, you see? And they will turn. They say, oh, might as well turn it off. We've seen most of the program. Then you start in. We went into a house in Battle Creek, Michigan. 5 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Man came to the door. Wife was sitting there with a crying baby. They had a Cocker Spaniel, little cutest puppy dog you ever saw, and the television going full speed ahead. He said, just a minute, I'll take the dog out. Now, mother stopped the baby from crying. He was a mean man. His countenance was solid. But I misjudged him. I thought he was really... belligerent, but he was under conviction. And I opened the Bible and began to read the scriptures. And I saw conviction steal across his countenance. Inside of a half an hour, that man was on his knees asking Jesus to save him. I saw him a few weeks ago, and he was baptized, joined the church, and he's one of the leading members of the church today, and his son is in Grand Rapids School of the Bible, studying to be a minister. I came back a year later to see him. And he tied up with the church immediately. But we didn't see any hope with the dog, the baby, and the television. But God took care of all three of them. Went to the Japanese home one night in Chicago, the worst experience we've ever had. Went into the home. Two boys. 8 and 10, they were tearing the house to pieces, running from one davenport to another and jumping on every chair in the house, screaming and yelling. The mama had gone shopping, the television was on, and the daddy was helpless. Couldn't do anything. Jumping all over the place, and I just had to hold everything to keep from jumping myself. Finally, I said to my friend, we got to do something. He said, well, what do we do? I said, I'll grab one of the boys. He's coming my way. So I reached out and made a pass for him. But instead of grabbing him, he was coming too fast, and he bounced and hit the doorknob on his forehead. Whew, brother, an egg this size came out on his forehead. But this big. Little boy went over in the corner and whimpered like a little puppy. Brother, my heart sunk. Daddy ran to the washroom quickly and got a cold wash rag and put it on his head, and I didn't know what to do, so I whipped out a dollar bill and I gave it to the boy. The boy stopped a little bit and stuffed it into his pocket, but the daddy didn't like it very well because we'd hurt his boy. Well, the other boy kept running and jumping, and the father kind of put us in the deep freeze. And so we had to leave. Once in a while, things like that happen. Now, when you get into the house, don't talk about church. Talk about the Bible. Do you have a Bible? Or better yet, say, you have a Bible, don't you? Oh, yes, we have a Bible. Well, could I see your Bible? And a lot of folks are proud to display their Bible. And they'll usually bring it out in a long box. A wrapped in tissue paper. All right, you take it out of the coffin, brother. Take it out. Be careful how you open it, because that's a precious thing, you know, to them. They never open it, of course. Just like out in Sumatra, the Kubus have the crocodile egg for a charm. This crocodile egg is put up above the doorway. That egg's in the house all the time. It's a charm. A lot of folks treat the Bible the same way. All right.
Let's read. I've found that the best thing to read is John 19 and John 20. That's the gospel. You say, they won't listen that long. Yes, they will. Because it's news to them.
But don't ask them to read.
Because most of them can't read properly. They can't pronounce Bethesda. They can't pronounce Philippi.
They'll call it the Philippines or call it something else. They don't know a lot of these words. And the therefores and the wherefores and the begottens and the begat. They don't know that. So you read out loud, let them follow. You don't know how much seed's been sown in their heart, and while you're reading, you're either cultivating, you're either watering, or you're either sowing, or you may be reaping all at once. Read the Bible out loud, not too slowly, and watch them as you read. Every now and then, lift your eyes. Be sure you're able to read it yourself. Properly, with the right inflection.
A lot of us can't read properly. Did you know that? I know some preachers that can't pronounce the names in the New Testament. Teach your members how to read out loud. Blessed is he that readeth.
Now, you're the human instrumentality. You read. Watch their faces. And if you see they're looking at their clocks or fidgeting or fussing, slow down a bit and stop for a moment. Ask a question to keep their attention. Oftentimes, you will see conviction steal upon their faces.
Sometimes they'll begin to weep as they hear of Christ's death on the cross.
And then, without any hesitancy, as you come to the end of the chapter, shift into chapter 20, quick! So you won't lose the resurrection. You see, the Catholics are all in the crucifixion, but there's no resurrection. It's Christ on the cross. He's not out of the tomb, you see. You want to get him out of that tomb. Off the cross and out of the tomb. So swing right into the 20th chapter. You're going to read both chapters in the Bible. A little over 10 minutes.
Some say, well, I don't have much time. But you'll be amazed, brother, how they forget time. How that little excuse kind of fades away after they've heard the word of the Lord.
Many times we've been able to lead people to Christ right after the reading of those two chapters. Sometimes we take a few verses in Romans, or in Corinthians, or in Timothy, some verses in the Old Testament, and just give them a few verses to show them their need of Christ and what they have to do to be saved. Romans 10, 9 and 10 is a wonderful one to close with, to get them to pray out loud and do something. Say, then what? All right. Here comes Mrs. Jones into the house. Here comes a pile of children home from school. Here comes a drunken husband from the kitchen. Here comes a belligerent wife from someplace. And before long, you've got relatives all around you. What are you going to do? Don't get excited and don't get nervous and don't excuse yourself too quickly. Carry Gospels of John in your pockets. Carry the Protestant version. This is the American Bible Society version. No notes or anything. You have the Gideons. You have the PTL and a few others. Always carry with you the St. John in the Dewey version. This is a Catholic version. Sells for a nickel. And it has in the back why Catholics should read the Bible. This is a Catholic edition, the Dewey version. And the Catholics will read it. A real scrupulous Catholic will ask for the new version with the imprimatur of the bishop or the archbishop. But very seldom do you find a real finicky one. Now carry these with you, and when members of the family come in, pass these out to those who can read. You'll find all kinds of in-laws and outlaws and 101 varieties of folks in the house, coming and going. Sometimes there's a whole parade. Out in Chicago and Melrose Park, we've got lots of Italians. Italians have big families, and brother, we thought there was a convention going on, but it was just in-laws, that's all, coming and going. And everyone got a gospel. Before long, we had a meeting. We had a meeting. Everybody reading the Bible, all Catholics. Brother, what a thrill. At that, he said, we should have done this long before. Why aren't we doing it now? And you come to us, a Protestant, with our own Bible. We're going to read it. Quagliato is the name of the family. Brother, what eye-opener we're getting. All right, you leave that gospel. Mr. and Mrs. Quagliato, you can read a chapter a day, can't you? Sure, why not? We get so many indulgences for it. Now, a lot of people don't know what the Bible is. You say, do you have a Bible? Yes, and they'll bring out a missal. Not a guided missal, one of these books. Yes, we've got a Bible. They'll bring out a prayer book. You know the difference on it. All right, leave this Gospel of John, whether they've got a Bible or not, because if they have a Bible, they'll read it at that time, but they'll close it and they'll lose their place unless you give them a marker. Give them this. Will you read a chapter a day? Yes. Men, carry it in your pockets. Ladies, keep it on top of the Frigidaire. Easy accessible. All right, now the real work begins. Number one's been contacted. How are we going to follow up? And this is the main thing. I'm going to close in just a few minutes. Don't get excited. We have just developed in Chicago, the CBMC and the Family Altar League, a follow-up program that we're just starting. Made up of envelopes with cards. This is the absolute minimum of follow-up. We make them up in packs. This is an instruction sheet. Says, here's how to get started in neighborhood evangelism. This is the ABCs for the most simple member in your church. That is, if he can read. Most of our members can read. So any Joe Blow can do it. He wants to. On the back side, we tell them how to follow up and what to write on the cards. Now, in each one of these envelopes, this envelope gives all the information. It saves the person from writing a lot of stuff. The average person can't write too well, and they don't like to write. So we have here name and the address. Is the person owner of the house? Is he a renter? And so on and so forth. Then we have here names, and then we have Baptist, Christian, Catholic, congregation, all the names of the denomination, and so on. You just make checks down here. Conditions in the home, divorce, drunkard, is it broken a home, pastor need to call, is there sickness in the home, a recent death, and so on. The nationality of the person, their work, and so on. Then on the back of the envelope, we've got a record of the visits. 12 visits. Record for 12 visits and the date you send cards and so forth. In these envelopes, we have 12 cards, all on John, in glossy white paper. This is John 12:48. He that rejecteth me. Everyone starts out with these words. Jesus said, he that rejecteth me and receiveth not my words hath one that judgeth him. The word that I have spoken shall judge him in the last day. Then we have John 8:32. And Jesus said, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And then other verses. But as many as received him. We don't say Jesus said this. We say the Bible says about Jesus. You see, so they'll know what the verse is talking about. Next verse. That all men should honor the Son, even as they honor the Father. This is a good one for the Jews. But these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word. John 5:24. John 14:1, let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me. And so on. I am the way, the truth, and the life. John 3:36. John 6:35, I am the bread of life. And I am the resurrection of life. And John 3:16. These cards are used to mail to Mr. Jones. You contact here or here. You contact him today. You say goodbye. You read that one chapter a day in John. Yes, all right. The card comes in the mail the next day. Postal card. Here it says, the family that prays together, stays together. The bottom it says, read one chapter of St. John, and always use St. John. They go for the word saint. Now, you and I here, we're all saints, of course, you see, and we don't make too much of a problem about it, but those folks think of a saint. Well, they don't think you and I are saints. But St. John, read the Gospel of St. John one chapter a day. Then right here, dear Mrs. Jones, nice seeing you the other day. Read a chapter a day. It gets better as you go along. Sincerely, Marion Smith. Write your address on there. They get that card. I'm the resurrection of life. Jesus. Yeah. I've got to read that chapter. I told that man I would.
Sure. All right, where's the card go? Table. The boyfriend comes in. What's that? Sees that. Father comes in. Sees that. All right. This is the absolute minimum of follow-up. How long does it take you to write a card? Half a minute? We encourage all the members of the churches to stamp their cards first with a 2-cent stamp. Then you're all ready to shoot them out in the mails. All right. Next week rolls along. Another card goes out. You get the reply back. I lost my gospel. Send me another one. The baby ate it up, or the baby that. Well, my husband got mad and tore it up, but I want another. Or, please send my husband one. He wants one too. And my mother-in-law. We all want one. All right, the third card goes out. The fourth card goes out. Pretty soon they're coming to your house. We don't have a Bible. Can you tell us where we can get a Bible? All right, this is the absolute minimum. What's the next? Letter. Okay, well, I don't have time to write a letter. All right, what's the next one? Phone call. Take you 2 minutes. Stormy night, call them on the phone. Don't have time to write a letter, call them on the phone. What's the next? Person to person. A recall back. Go back in person. Take another person. Meet the person down at lunch, maybe in the city. Now, there's many ways you can recontact, but this card system is the absolute minimum, and anybody can do it. Now, I've taken these envelopes and put them on a little ring. This happens to be my own personal set that I'm using in a couple of neighborhoods in Chicago. Now, I've got to write about 20 cards tomorrow to keep up with these folks that I've just contacted. Every one of these folks has taken a Gospel of John. This is Mr. and Mrs. Heller, Mr. and Mrs. Moss, Mr. and Mrs. Roth, Mr. and Mrs. Keel accepted Christ 2 blocks from...